Welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan.
I'm Kelso.
And I'm Hillary.
So, all right, guys, I read so many books in the last, few weeks. I've been crushing audiobooks.
Yeah.
And I'm real excited about it. I listened to Disney's Land by Richard Snow,
okay.
Which is like the history of Disneyland. So it's the history of Walt's dreaming up and creating Disneyland. And it was such a delight because a lot of the stories I already knew because I'm a Disney nut. There were like interviews with people that I'd never heard of and stories I'd never heard, and oh my god, there were parts that were hilarious and there were parts that were really sweet, and it was a really cool history of it. I actually, sort of in conjunction with this book, I really recommend the Imagineering documentary on Disney Plus because it kind of follows the same timeline, and they interview Imagineers and like people who have worked there from the beginning and still work there. There's like a woman who she started working there and now her daughter works there, and like you get this really cool history in addition to like the cool Imagineering stuff. So those kind of hand in hand were really fun. I really, really loved it. Jim loved it too. Jim made it his staff pick this month. It's a really cool history book. So I listened to that. I listened to that on the way to Disney. and then I read Pride by E.B. Javoy, which I loved so much. I had never heard of this book. It actually came out, I think it came out a couple years ago, actually. Yeah, it came out in September of 2018, and it was so not on my radar. And then we got an advanced listening copy of it. Mm-hmm. I guess it was just a listening copy. It's not advanced. This year, and it's read by Elizabeth Acevedo, who wrote The Poet X, and it's really cool. It's a retelling of Pride and Prejudice, but it's set in modern-day Brooklyn, and the entire cast of characters are all people of color, and it's like a really cool modern version of the story, and I loved it. It was so good. Really, really, really recommend that. Well, I finally finished The Unwilling by Kelly Braffett, which was awesome. Really awesome fantasy. Anyone who's like still mad about Game of Thrones should read this. It has that sort of like political drama, high fantasy, high stakes, but it's way more like zoomed in. Like you're only following basically four characters, and you're sort of either in the castle or with like one other person outside, like in the city. That's the one where the Lord's heir has been raised alongside, they call her the Foundling. She's an orphan who was raised at the castle, and everyone just assumes that the Lord and his wife adopted her out of the kindness of their hearts because the lady kept losing children. But in reality, it's the reason they have kept her around is because she, her name is Judah, and the Lord's heir, Gavin, share this crazy bond where if one of them is hurt, the other one is also hurt in the same way. Mm-hmm. So if you cut Gavin, Judah also gets a cut. And so they have to keep her safe because if she gets killed, Gavin gets killed. Right. And it's one of those books where it's building and building and building, and like you feel like you've known these characters forever. Like you feel like you've been reading a whole series of them, and because it's really character driven, and then something happens about two-thirds of the way through the book and everything changes and it totally flips on its head. And like I devoured part two because I was like, wait, what is happening? Things you thought you knew. Turns out you were totally wrong, being misled. People's true identities start to sort of surface. Other people are changing and you don't know why. It's like, why are you being so mean? Mm-hmm. Really intense, really, really good. Awesome, awesome fantasy. And Elizabeth and I got to go down to Kelly Breathitt's launch event for that down in Newton, Mass. It was actually her. She was in conversation with Kat Howard, who is one of she's a local author who wrote one of my favorite fantasies, and In Kindness of Magicians. So we got to see them, and it was a really, really fun little event. And just hearing Kelly talk about like how she spent like 20 years thinking about this book and like finally wrote it, because she doesn't usually write fantasy. She writes sort of like dramas and mysteries, and she finally sat down and wrote this fantasy novel and just like crushed it. It's awesome. It is dark. There's a lot of abuse, mostly from sort of the higher-ups who are kind of like testing the bond between the kids. They're like, well, how much does each feel? So they would like do terrible things to Judah to see like how much of it did Gavin feel, and like how long did the scars last, and how far can we push them? So it's like, it's pretty dark, but it really, you know, it's not glorified. It's definitely like, oh yeah, no, those are bad people doing bad things. Mm-hmm. Actually, her Twitter bio is terrible people doing terrible things, this time with magic. So yeah, that was one that, you know, when I read fantasy, I tend to go more like light fantasy, more things that are like kind of our world adjacent. So it's like, it could in theory happen here. So, you know, to like delve into like a deep world, I was like, okay, buckle up. But it was really good. And she is working on a sequel, which I'm excited for. And then I did listen to Little Weirds by Jenny Slate, which is her collection of essays. And she's a fantastic writer. Really, really beautiful. I thought, you know, given who Jenny Slate is, she's a comedian. She's hilarious. She's on like Parks and Rec and other things like that. And so I expected a very, very funny collection of essays. And it's really not. It's really tender and kind of bittersweet and at times very sort of sad. And she touches on a lot of topics. She focuses a lot on love and sort of her journey with these relationships that she thought was like the end all be all, this is the one, and then they'd break her heart, and then she'd get into another one, and then they'd break her heart, and a lot of highs and lows. She talks about her, you know, journey with depression and anxiety and things like that, and she uses a lot of really interesting metaphors. There's so much metaphor, and she kind of goes down these rabbit holes of metaphors, and it just is incredible, but also like kind of messes with your head a little bit. And then as soon as I finished that, I listened to The Phantom Toll Booth, which I...
Oh my God, that's my favorite book of all time. Have you never read that?
Well, I read it when I was really young, and it had been years and years and years, and one of my book clubs was reading it, and I was so excited, because I was like, oh, I have the audiobook of that. It's read by Rainn Wilson from The Office.
Okay.
He does an amazing job. And it was so funny listening to it this time, like reading it this time, and there was, you know, so much that I had forgotten or just, like, missed when I was younger. And I was like, oh, this is just like Alice in Wonderland. This is, like, a kid is bored, goes through a weird, like, portal into another world, and it's all nonsense and plays with language, and it's very, like, punny and weird and at times scary, and then they come back and they're totally different, but you know, their world, no time has passed. I was like, oh yeah, no, this is Alice in Wonderland. this is amazing.
Milo.
Yeah.
And what was Milo's dog's name?
The watchdog.
Yeah, the watchdog. That's right.
Yeah.
The watchdog.
Yeah.
I am 61 years old. When I was maybe 9 or 10, I made a diorama for school of the Phantom Toll Booth. So that is how long that book has been around.
That's so cute.
It was one of my faves.
Yeah, I was so excited when we got the listening copy of it. It was such a delight.
Oh, it is. What a fun book. What a great book. If you have kids, get this book.
Right? And like just like the playing with the language.
It's all about language.
It's all about language. And, like, a little bit about math, but, yeah, like, mostly about language. Yeah. Oh, gosh, it's so much fun. So, yeah, that was really, really fun to kind of revisit. And it felt like I was reading it for the first time because I was like, I don't remember any of this. I was like, I know I read this, but, yeah, I had forgotten so much of it. So it was really fun. So that's what I read. Kelso, what have you been up to? What have you been reading?
I've been reading a lot of nonfiction lately. Ooh. I've been reading and listening to a lot of nonfiction. I did, as I said, that pick one of my books as a fiction book that I've been currently reading. But right now I'm listening to on Libro.fm, How to Change Your Mind, What the New Science of Psychedelics Teaches Us About Consciousness, Dying, Addiction, Depression, and Transcendence. And it is by Michael Pollan. And it is audioed by the author as well.
Oh, cool.
And it's, like, exactly what the title says. It's a 500-page book about how psychedelics change your mind and the reasons leading up to back in the 60s and 70s, then it became a class one substance, and then how today's scientists and therapists are trying to figure out how to help people with depression, anxiety, PTSD while using psychotropic drugs. Hmm. And Michael Pollan is the same guy who wrote a bunch of food related domestic
narratives. The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Yeah.
This one.
So it's just, but it's fascinating because he just goes over this history of LSD and psychotropic drugs and how they could help or hurt the brain and how to transcend into different areas of consciousness. And I was like, that sounds so cool, man. So
in the Omnivore's Dilemma, he talks about how a woman's uterus has receptors for THC.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so like if you have menstrual cramps, your uterus is designed to relax a little bit if you smoke pot. I think that's where he started getting his interest in it. But this is actually a very serious, important therapy. And they're also using ketamine to help people who have, like, major depression so badly that they're in danger of suicide.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important therapy. Huh. And I think soon it's going to just be legal. And, people will go to therapists and do it. He had to kind of go underground.
Right, in order to do this. Because this was published in 2018. It's in paperback right now. But it's just a fascinating look of, like, how recreational drugs, just, like, the history of recreational drugs back then and what we're doing now to order to try to, like, soothe the mind of all of this conscious effort with recreational drugs. It's an interesting book. I'm recommending it. Super good. And, of course, I can't, like, not talk about gay authors on the podcast. I have to bring to the table at least one. So another one that I am reading is called My Autobiography of Carson McCullers by Jan Shapland. And I've never heard of Carson McCullers
before.
You
haven't read any of her work?
No.
Oh, she's such a wonderful writer.
So I picked up this book knowing that Jan Shapland is a gay author, and I subscribed to Lambda Literary Magazine, and so they were talking about this and reviewing the book, and I was like, no way, this is so cool. So for people who don't know, Carson McCullers wrote The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. She had married very young. She grew up in the South. Very tragic kind of story. Mm-hmm. But that's all we kind of really known about her for a really long time. And Jen was working as an intern at the Harry Ransom Archives, and she found in the archives these letters written to Carson by her lover Anne Marie, and they were the most tender and unabashed love letters that Jen has ever read. And she quotes some of them in this book, and they are sweet. They are really tender. They're very loving. They're almost, like, borderline obsessive with, like, Anne Marie is very obsessed with Carson. And they just love each other so much. And you never hear about these letters, even though they exist.
Huh.
And it had been known that Carson McCullers was a lesbian, but she had married a man. And so Jen decided that she wanted to kind of write her own story of Carson McCullers, but she also wanted to incorporate pieces of herself into Carson's life. So she, for researching this book, she like goes to her house, Carson's house, and like sits in her bathtub and eats pizza. She obviously reads a lot about her life. She goes to read and listen to her transcripts at Carson's therapy appointments. Like, she fully immerses herself into this life that Carson had. And so meanwhile, the way the book is set up is you get Jen's vignettes of her life, as well as a meeting point in the middle of Carson's background in meeting life, where you kind of get this this whole great picture of what it means to be queer and what we do with queer stories, especially queer stories and queer writers that we don't really know a lot about. It's just a really, like, tender book. It reminds me a lot of In the Dream House, where they have that different type of, it's a memoir as something else. Mm-hmm. And it's just this, like, organic self thing. That's why it's called my autobiography of Carson McCullers. Cool. Because she kind of feels this meeting point in the middle. And it's just so good. And I really enjoy reading about little known gay authors written by a gay person. So that's something I would pick up. The final one that I want to talk about is not out yet. It will be out in June of this year. It's called Freshwater for Flowers by Valerie Perrin. This came out in 2018 in France. This is by a French author. It is finally coming to the United States. It's a very sweet and quirky book by way of a man called Uwe Baratown. You have these casts of characters in them that are very memorable. They're funny. They're quirky. It's about this woman named Violette Toussaint. She is a caretaker at a cemetery in a small town. She gets people coming into her house because she lives in the cemetery. You have the visitors, so she talks a lot about the visitors, and she talks a lot about the people who are buried in her little cemetery in this little French town. There's, like, a hot priest in it, which is kind of fun to read, and it's really about her life growing up. So you get some of the story is going to be about her life growing up poor in foster care and how she got to where she is taking care of the cemetery. And it is also a story about this local police chief who comes, who has his mother's ashes, and his mother's final wish was to be spread over the ashes of this man who is not his father and that he's never met. And so he's buried in the cemetery, and so he wants to know why his mother wants to be spread over the grave of this other person who, come to find out, is her lover. Mm-hmm. And so there's this kind of little mystery to it, because the more that you learn about the local police officer's mother's affair, the more you learn about the cemetery keeper's life, as well as her husband just mysteriously disappears and is found after like 15 years gone. What? It's this really sweet, like, it's melancholy type of, almost like a love story. I would not necessarily have picked this up, but it's a bright yellow cover.
Yeah, the arc is fluorescent yellow.
Yes.
This is one that came from Winter Institute that was being highly recommended by people there.
And it's been getting a lot of press. It was a bestseller in France in the last couple of years. So I was like, yeah, we'll give this a shot. I want to read something different. So it's fun, and I can't wait for it to come out, because it's one of those, like, you don't realize it's going to be a feel-good story until you start reading it, and you're just like, oh, this is a very sweet story, and I'm not a very sweet story kind of person. So
yeah, it depends on the book.
Right. So I'm going to highly recommend that in June. Great beach read, I think. If you kind of like a little, you know, literary-ish point to some of your you're like little beech reeds.
That's awesome. So
that's what I'm reading.
Sounds sweet.
Hillary.
Let's see. I have a few things here. One is coming out soon. One is out. I think, is this out now? Vera Kelly. No, I'm lying. It's out in June. Okay. So these are all things that are coming out in the near future. One I just absolutely loved. I believe it's going to be out March 24th. It's called Enter the Aardvark by Jessica Anthony. This book reminded me of a funny way of Frankenstein, mm-hmm. in that it has this contemporary story that's quite satirical, and then this 19th century parallel story that is much more serious, in the same way Frankenstein was divided up. The story in the present is about a mid-30s Republican congressman who has a distinct lack of empathy for anybody. He just wants to get ahead. He wants to be president someday. He'll do anything he can to do that. He also happens to be sort of embezzling money out of his accounts. And he's been having an affair, a long-term affair, with another man. Mm-hmm. And he's in complete denial about the fact that he's gay.
Of course he is.
He's just a straight guy who happens to like to sleep with this other guy. And as the story begins, a huge box is delivered by FedEx to his house, and inside is a taxidermy aardvark. And this aardvark, he knows, comes from the home of his lover, and he doesn't understand why it's wound up at his house. The parallel story is about how this taxidermy aardvark came into existence. Oh. And that parallel story is about a biologist in the mid-19th century, Victorian era, who travels all around the world collecting samples, and he is secretly in love with another man who's a taxidermist.
Hmm.
And they have, it's quite a, their relationship is pretty tragic. It's lovely. You meet the wife of the biologist, who has no idea what's going on. I don't know really what else to say about this, except that the contemporary story is very satirical and funny. It is really about hypocrisy,
mm-hmm.
but it's also quite tragic. Mm. And it's also a little bit like Veep, you know, the, mm-hmm. the people in Washington who are just screwing one another right and left, mm-hmm. and just, and not sexually, but, you know, like right. politically.
Right.
And it's just one of these books that you don't really know where it's going to begin with, and then it winds up in a really kind of amazing place.
Hmm.
So that will be out March 24th. I highly recommend it. And I listened to the Libro FM version of it, and it was excellent.
Hmm.
The next two I want to talk about are two horror books.
Hillary!
One is the new Paul Tremblay, which is coming out in July.
Him.
Paul Tremblay, he's been here.
He has.
His last book was The Cabin at the End of the World. I think my favorite of his that I've read is A Head Full of Ghosts.
Yes, that's my favorite too. That is, yeah. I liked the, what's the Disappearance at Devil's Rock?
I haven't read that one.
That one was pretty good, but, oh, Head Full of Ghosts is like perfection.
Yeah, and you know what? Head Full of Ghosts was a takeoff of another story, wasn't it?
It was sort of like The Exorcist meets...
it's like live television, right?
Yeah. It's like,
oh, it's sort of like Turn of the Screw.
Yes, that's what it was. Because, yeah, it's like the one daughter is, like, maybe possessed, and the parents, like, maybe... sign her up for like a not a reality show but yeah, kind
yeah,
of a reality,
yeah, a reality
show.
It is,
yeah.
Show, yeah.
Kind of exploit
so
her.
So is she faking
and you're
it
like,
or is she not faking
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you spend the whole book being like, is she really possessed? Is she just faking this? Like, what's going on? And like her little sister like is also like, I don't know if this is
real or not, but then, like, some of the things that happen, you're like, oh, I don't know, that was pretty scary. Right, it was so good. Yeah. I loved that book so much.
This new one is perfect for the era of coronavirus.
Ooh.
The premise, and I'm not giving anything away, you find this out in the first couple of pages. The premise of the book is, all of the sudden, there is this unbelievably virulent form of rabies that appears in Massachusetts. So this happens, like, I grew up in Brockton. Like, Brockton is in this book. Stoughton is where a lot of it takes place.
No.
But there's a woman who's 8 months pregnant. Within the first couple of pages, she gets bitten by a guy who has this disease.
Oh, no.
She calls her friend, who is a doctor, and says, you've got to come and get me. You've got to help me. Because you basically have 1 hour to get the rabies vaccine or you're dead.
No. Oh, my God.
And so it takes place. Well, there's a sort of like a preface, and there's sort of like an afterword
mm-hmm.
that take place in sort of different time periods. But the main part of the book takes place across a single day.
Wow.
It reminds me a little bit of Bird Box.
Okay,
which, if you remember, had a pregnant woman in it. And, and you weren't sure, you know,
what was
gonna
happen?
She going to make it? Would the baby make it? This one is this is coming out in July. Going to be a good summer read, and kind of terrifying in the era of coronavirus.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm so excited.
So if you want it, you can have the archive because I read it. It's good.
Yay.
This other one I picked up, and I think I also got this at Winter Institute. this one is coming out in April. It's called You Let Me In. The cover of this book makes it look like it's a thriller.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a thriller.
Okay.
This is horror.
Ooh.
This book is a lot like, it's like Victor Laval meets Shirley Jackson.
Ooh.
So the basic premise of the book is that there is a woman named Cassandra Tipp who's in her 70s. She's written like 40 bestsellers. She's very eccentric. She lives alone. And there's been tragedy and scandal in her past. When she was a much younger woman, her husband was murdered, and she was accused of the crime, and mm-hmm. she was acquitted. And then, like 10 years later, her brother and father were involved in a murder-suicide.
Oh, my God.
She has one remaining sister. The sister wants nothing to do with her.
Mm-hmm.
Cassandra disappears, and her will is revealed. She's leaving everything, her fortune, to her two, her nephew and her niece.
Hmm.
But they have to come and read a manuscript that she has left for them. And until they do that, they can't get their inheritance.
Hmm.
And when they begin to read the manuscript, her story is that from the age of maybe 8, that she was possessed by a male fairy.
Hmm.
Who is a very scary guy that she calls the Pepperman. And she tells the whole story of her life with the Pepperman.
Oh,
and she has disappeared completely. She's gone. Nobody knows if she's dead or alive. She's been missing for a year when the story begins. There's been no activity in her bank accounts. Her passport hasn't been used. She has just vanished.
Wow. Oh, that sounds
really
creepy.
Really scary, and then ultimately kind of touching.
Okay.
But like in Shirley Jackson, for example, The Haunting of Hill House, it is really hard to know what is true.
Yeah.
What has really happened.
Mm.
Highly, highly recommended. This woman, I think, is being published by Tor here, but I believe it's a Norwegian writer.
Gotcha.
Who wrote this book. And it's been translated. Camilla Bruce. You Let Me In by Camilla Bruce.
Mm.
Out in April. Highly recommended if you like Shirley Jackson or Victor Laval.
Awesome.
The last one I want to talk about is Vera Kelly Is Not a Mystery by Rosalie Knecht. I believe it's pronounced Knecht. It's K-N-E-C-H-T.
Knecht.
Her last book was called Who is Vera Kelly? Mm-hmm. So it's a series.
Mm-hmm.
This woman, Rosalie Knecht, who wrote this, is a translator from Spanish. She translates Cesar Aria. era. I'm sorry, I'm pronouncing that wrong. And the first Vera Kelly was, Vera Kelly is super smart. She's a lesbian. As a teenager, she's kicked out by her mother because she's gay. Mm-hmm. And it's the early 1960s.
Okay.
And she's struggling to make a living. And because she's really good at languages, she's picked up by the CIA. And they send her, I believe it's to Venezuela, because there's political unrest there. And so the first one, who is Vera Kelly, is all about Vera Kelly going there, going undercover with college students there, and inserting herself into the revolution. And then when things get bad, being abandoned by the CIA and having to, like, fight her way out of the country.
Okay.
This one, Vera Kelly is Not a Mystery, picks up after that, and now Vera Kelly has become a private eye. And she is approached by some people who are from the Dominican Republic, and it's during the era of, it's right after there's been a coup in the Dominican Republic. Again, the CIA has been involved in this. There's been a really bad dictator there, and he's out now, and there's another bad dictator there. And there are reprisal killings going on there. So it's like 68, I believe, is when this is happening. And these this Dominican couple comes to her. They're wealthy, and they say, our child has been kidnapped. Can you find our child? And it's about Vera Kelly going undercover to see if she can find what happened to this kid, and also having to go to the Dominican Republic in the middle of this sort of terrifying events that are happening there. Mm-hmm. I really like both of these books. I love this series. And it's also like a really interesting character, because she is a gay woman at a time when you can get fired for being gay.
Yeah.
I mean, you still can get fired for being gay, but it's the era of Stonewall, mm-hmm. and the police really cracking down on mm-hmm. gay people. So there's a lot of stuff about the clubs in New York City at that time. An easy read, but really entertaining. And this one is going to be out June 16th.
That's
so
awesome.
Vera Kelly is Not a Mystery, Rosalie Necht.
That's awesome.
Excellent.
So I had this fun interaction with a customer the other day. He came in. He was so sweet. He was like, I was not a big reader as a kid. I'm trying to kind of make up for lost time. He's like, I'm trying to read the classics. And I was like, okay, cool. And he was like, but I have a really hard time with the language. And I was like, hey, same. So he was looking for advice, because he really wanted to kind of like be a good reader and read the classics, but he had a hard time with them. And
did he tell you a book that he had tried to read and
couldn't
get through it?
Oh, so he had tried, some Jane Austen, some Bronte. He had tried, poor guy, he started with, like, Les Mis and, like, Moby Dick. And I was like, oh, honey. Don't start there.
Don't start with the big fat ones.
But he was so, so sweet. And so we talked about a few different things that he could do. You know, I recommended trying some of the abridged classics that are in our kids section to, you know, give yourself an idea of the story, but it's more accessible. I recommended audiobooks. I was like, you know, sometimes when I want to read something that's very, like, outside of my normal genre, I'll listen to an audiobook, because then it's like I'm being told a story and I can get the gist of it without having to struggle through the language. I can get the point of it. It's the same way that, like, I can watch a Shakespeare play and fully understand it, but if I read Shakespeare, I'm like, I can't focus on it. Mm-hmm. there's something about someone presenting the story to me that makes it easier. And then the other thing I recommended were adaptations and retellings, because I was like, you know, a lot of classics have been retold over and over and over and over again, and especially in the last, I would say, 5 years in young adult, there was a huge resurgence of retellings and fractured fairy tales and all of these things. And so he, you know, was very, very sweet and left very happy, and we had a really nice conversation. I told him about, actually, Pride by E.B. Du Bois, which I talked about earlier, as an example. But I just, you know, it just really, it always sticks with me that there is this mindset that so many people have that in order to be a quote-unquote good reader or a well-rounded reader, you have to have read the classics. And that just kind of, I don't love that. Because, again, like, I'm someone who I also have trouble with the language of a lot of the classics, because we don't talk that way anymore, and so there's a lot of sentences that I'm like, okay, you just used 27 words to say something that you could have said in 4, and I understand that that's, it's well written, and I get that, but also my brain has to work so hard to process that, that I lose the thread of the story. Like, my brain just doesn't, I read so much contemporary fiction that my brain has a really hard time with older classics. It just doesn't, I have to work twice as hard to read them. I just have to, like, it's really hard for me. And I think that's true for a lot of people. And also, you know, I do have some classics that I love. You know, I'm obsessed with Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. I read Frankenstein in high school and loved it, devoured it. There's value there. There are classics that I love, but I also think there are some classics that I'm like, I don't know if this is a necessary, like, I don't know if high schools need to be forcing teenagers to read these books still.
And I want also just throw in there, let's talk about the gatekeepers and who decides what's classic, right? You know, what, like, it's a lot of white men, basically. And there are writers, there have been writers from all over the world. Writing for centuries. And, you know, we should open, I think we should open out a bit. And I agree, you can really turn kids off by forcing them to read, quote unquote, the classics. And, you know, maybe kids should just, not always, I mean, you need to challenge yourself. But maybe there are new classics. As opposed to old classics. You know, maybe Of Mice and Men isn't the book that high schoolers need to read anymore. It's short. I think that's one reason.
And, you know, there's curriculums for it in place. And there's, you know, I just think that there's this really difficult mindset of, if you haven't read the classics, you're not a true bibliophile. And I just think that's wrong, because I think as long as you're reading, you're a reader, and it doesn't, I don't care what you read. But, you know, I was thinking about sort of retellings and adaptations and things like that, and I was walking through, I've got a big stack in front of me of some of my favorite young adult retellings of classics, and you've got things like, one of the first ones I read was Splintered by A.G. Howard, which is a reimagining of Alice in Wonderland, which is a story that has been reimagined 10 million times, which I can tell you because I own all of them. and, you know, I've got one called Spinning Silver by Naomi Novik.
That is wonderful. Which I love is that book.
A Rumpelstiltskin story. I read one called Winterspell that is a retelling of The Nutcracker. There are these, you know, Egg and Spoon by Gregory Maguire, who wrote Wicked, which is a Baba Yaga story. And I think there's something so valuable about these retellings where you are getting the story, mm-hmm. you're getting the meat of the story, but it's told in a way that is more accessible to today's language and today's society. And so it's not going to turn off a young reader or, right. or any reader, you yeah. know, an older reader, because it's, you know, you can get swept up in it. And, like I read multiple, retellings of Pride and Prejudice long before I read Pride and Prejudice. Yeah. And so then when I did end up picking up Pride and Prejudice, I was like, oh, okay. I was able to, it actually really helped me read it through that more difficult language because I knew what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I knew who the characters were, what they were doing, what their motivations were. So I was able to kind of, it really helped me get lost in the story. But I just thought it was a really interesting interaction because this poor guy was like really kind of embarrassed that he was having trouble reading the classics and that he really wanted to make up for lost time. And I was like,
don't be embarrassed.
Dude, I work in a bookstore and I don't read the classics. Right. Like you're, and props to him for trying and asking for help. And I forget what he ended up buying that day. He was buying, I think he was getting 1984. Mm-hmm. And I think there was one other one. And I think he actually ended up buying Pride by E.B. Jaboy.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh. but yeah, I don't know. I honestly think about this a lot because I see it a lot every time the summer reading lists come out. There's, I know, and they're good. They have a good mix of contemporary novels, but there's always the same classics yeah. over and over. And I'm like, okay, do they really need to read about Holden Caulfield being a whiny yeah. brat for 200 pages?
Everybody's
I don't know.
Everybody's fake.
Everybody's phony.
Phony.
You know, and like, and that's a case where Catcher in the Rye is one that people either love or hate, and it's so valid either way. I can look at that book and I can understand why it's still in print. I can understand why people love it. I can see the craft of it. And I can still hate it with every fiber of my being, and that's okay. You know, because I read it at a time, I was not an adolescent when I read it. I was an yeah. adult. So I was already so over whiny teenagers. Like, yeah. if I had read it when I was a whiny teenager, I would have loved it. I know that beyond a shadow of a doubt. But I read it in college, so I was like, ugh, he's annoying. I'm so above him. You know, he's annoying. He doesn't do anything except whine. However, I can respect the fact that, like, there are references from Catcher in the Rye that I wouldn't understand if I hadn't read it. Mm-hmm. There are references from The Great Gatsby, which is a classic that I love.
And it's mm-hmm. not very long. Great Gatsby is a good one.
Great Gatsby yeah. is a really good one because it's really short and it's not a difficult read. That one's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But there are references from that that I wouldn't get if I hadn't read it. You know, so like, I do understand the value of classics, but I also just think like, I think there needs to be a little more acceptance of things like retellings, and accepting more modern classics, and mm-hmm. accepting the fact that there's really good literature being written right now.
Right.
I just have to say something. I was trying to find this book on our website that is this book that's about adaptations of Jane Austen.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is also about like why she's so adaptable, what mm-hmm. it is about the story. So I'm trying to find the title of this book, and I go to our webpage and I just type in Jane Austen and then I click on last. We have 720 pages of books relating to Jane Austen listed oh at our God. Website.
And that's so just our website.
That just oh tells you right there that she's really important she to is. Contemporary culture right
yes.
now. But it doesn't mean you have to read her.
Right. There's, oh my gosh, there was a few years ago, this really amazing adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. It's called The Lizzie Bennet Diaries. And I could talk about The Lizzie Bennet Diaries until I'm blue in the face because it was genius. It was put out by Bernie Sue and one other person, and it was sort of like sponsored by Hank Green and John mm-hmm. Green. So it was, at its core, it was a web series on YouTube, but it was also simultaneously, it was on, there was a Twitter aspect and an Instagram aspect. Mm-hmm. And what it was Lizzie Bennet, who is obviously Elizabeth Bennet, was making a video diary. It was like over the course of a summer. And she's vlogging. She's just like sitting in her room making a video diary. And the things that happen are the story beats of Pride and Prejudice. But it was fascinating because, so you're watching her video diaries and she'll be talking about, you know, the Darcy character or, you know, her sister Lydia or their neighbor or mm-hmm. whoever. And, you know, drama would happen and she'd be like, she would say something in the video diary. And then in the days between posts, you could follow the characters on Twitter and Instagram and you would see, like, the drama stirring.
Kind of like in real time.
Hilarious. In real time. That is hilarious. And like you would see Instagram posts with what's his name? Beckett? No, what's the douchey guy. He's a swimmer in the web series. But the guy that she likes who ends up like ruining her sister's life. And so you're seeing him, like, post a photo mm-hmm. on Instagram, and you're like, wait, but he's supposed to be at this other thing. He mm-hmm. just said on Twitter that he was doing this, but then he just... And so you're following this, like, in real time as if they are real characters, and you're following, like, her and Darcy, like, falling in love. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's amazing. It was this really... And you can go to their website, thelizziebennetdiaries.com, and it has all of the links in chronological order. So right. you can either just watch the videos or you can go through. And I think there was also maybe a blog. And you can kind of, like, do the whole experience. And once that wrapped up, it was, like, a few months later, they published a book called The Lizzie Bennet Diaries that were her actual diaries. It was her mm-hmm. notes between videos. It was like nice. Her diaries between video posts. And when that came out, I actually did a full like rewatch of the videos while I was reading it to mm-hmm. see like what kind of like what was happening when. And when you watch, when you do the whole experience, like it's the full story of Pride and Prejudice with all of the characters and every little bit of drama, but it's all modern retelling. And it was incredible. It was such a huge undertaking that they were able to do everything in real time. And I'm sure it was, like, scheduled. You know what I mean? I'm sure it was scheduled yeah. tweets and scheduled posts and all that stuff. But it was so perfectly executed. And it was the first time I'd ever seen anything like it. They did something similar with Frankenstein, actually, called Frankenstein MD. And it was really cute. It was, like, Steve Zaragoza, who's a YouTuber, plays, like, an intern or something. They're it's him and this girl, and they're both, I think, interns at, like, med school. But she is Frankenstein. She is Dr. Frankenstein. And so she's just like, oh, I'm just doing these little experiments. And he's like, okay, I guess I'll hang out with you because I'm basically Igor. and that was really, really cute.
Mallory Ortberg has that great book, Text from Jane Eyre.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Very similar. Mallory was now Daniel Ortberg.
Yes, yes. Very similar vibes. And I just love that it translates so well because
it's hilarious.
Oh, they're so funny. And like at its core, like a lot of the classics are very sort of like simple stories. It's like relationships and drama and things like that. I mean, I guess Frankenstein isn't exactly a simple story, but like Pride and Prejudice is, you
or
know.
Like Romeo and Juliet.
Adaptations
of that have there been.
I love stuff like that because, again, I did the whole Lizzie Bennet Diaries thing way before I read Pride and Prejudice. And it opens, the very first video is she's sitting there and she holds up a t-shirt that her mother has made her. And it's the first line of Pride and Prejudice. It is a truth universally acknowledged, you know. And I laughed so hard because I did know that that was the first line of Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. And she's just deadpanning at the camera, holding this t-shirt, this DIY t-shirt. And she's just like, so my mom got me this. And it just, I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. And like, I just love that. I love that, like, there's a great way to bring this new generation into the story, to understand the references, to learn who the characters are, without forcing them to read a book that they might not want to read, they might not be able to get through, they might not understand. It's like, here's a way to make it accessible and fun and funny.
I do really think that listening to them is a really great way to do it. And one thing I would recommend is versions of Charles Dickens tend to be excellent. I am a sucker for a British accent, and I've listened to a bunch of these. Bleak House is one of my favorite. Nicholas Nickleby is great on tape, on CD. The voices are wonderful. You know, you get this one person who does 9 million voices, and there's a lot of comedy in Charles Dickens, so it is a very funny listen if there's a good reader. And also keep in mind that a lot of these classics, like Dickens novels, the really big fat ones, like Conrad, like Lord Jim, for example, or what was this other famous book that he wrote? Well, we'll think of it. They were meant for magazine publications, and they were doing them one chapter at a time. They were serialized.
Oh, interesting.
So, you know, maybe like try reading one chapter and waiting a week and then read the next chapter. Sure. You know, they tend to have little cliffhangers at the end of every chapter.
Yeah.
So you don't have to sit down and read the whole thing.
Yeah.
People used to go down and wait for the boats to land in New York Harbor to get the next section of a Charles Dickens novel.
Wow.
But what do you guys think about? I mean, I have some that I would highly recommend just reading.
Sure.
Like I was just, you know, when you started talking about this, Little Women. Mm-hmm. I read, when I was a kid, I read Little Women multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one chapter that I especially read over and over again because it made me cry. And I loved that a book could make me cry. And I just picked it up and I was looking at it. And I was like, it's going to make me cry right now. And it is The Valley of the Shadow.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, the chapter where Beth dies.
Yep.
And it is just beautiful. Mm-hmm. It is not a long chapter. It is just beautiful. So maybe just try picking up a book and, like, go read The Valley of the Shadow and see if it makes you cry. And then maybe you'll be like, all right, maybe I should read the rest of this book.
Yeah, I absolutely do think there are, like I said, like, I have some of my favorites. You know, like, for example, so, like, Frankenstein was one of the few classics in high school that I actually read cover to cover, like, couldn't put it down. I didn't skim it. I didn't look it up on SparkNotes. Like, I read it, and I was so taken with it, not just because of the story, which I loved, but also because, like, here's this female author writing a sci-fi novel. She launched science fiction.
Yeah.
that's so cool. So, you know, there's things like that. And, like, I loved, you know, I love Alice in Wonderland, which started in college. It was my capstone. My senior thesis was based on Alice in Wonderland, but it started because I was taking a literature and film class, and I wrote a paper comparing the book to the Disney movie, mm-hmm. to the sci-fi miniseries that had just come out that I was, like, in love with. And then that just spiraled, because then I started finding all these other adaptations, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is really fun. This is really cool. And, like, there's a story where it was the first book written for children that didn't have a moral at yeah. the end. It didn't have a, and so that's why you should always listen to your parents.
In fact, it's the opposite. It makes the fun opposite. Of that.
Yes. And I thought that was so fun and silly and, you know, classics like that that are, they've got a cool history behind them, I think that's really cool. And I do think that helps. Like, if you do want to read the classics, sometimes looking into the history of it and, like,
or get an annotated version.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially, like, with Shakespeare, get the annotated versions.
Annotated because Shakespeare's cool.
But there's a great annotated Alice. I'm sure you own it. Mm-hmm. It's, which is,
she's got two.
I want to talk about one of my faves of Dickens is The Tale of Two Cities.
Ooh.
A Tale of Two Cities. And I just have to do this because this book wins the competition for the best first line and the best closing line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you probably have heard this, but first sentence, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven. We were all going direct the other way. In short, the period was so far like the present period that some of its noisiest authorities insisted on its being received for good or for evil in the superlative degree of comparison only. We live in this age right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last line, oh, this is going to make me cry. It is a far, far better thing that I do than I have ever done. It is a far, far better rest that I go to than I have ever known. Mm-hmm. This is the rascal of the novel, stepping up and doing a really great thing at the mm-hmm. end of this book. And it is really worth reading through to see what it is. Sydney Carton, have you read this book?
No. So I haven't really read any classics. I mean, when I was in high school, the only classics that I remember reading that really, like, profoundly touched me were a short story called The Lottery.
Mm. Oh, the Shirley Jackson.
But is that a classic?
Yes, you know? That's a, like, classic, yeah.
A lot of people...
I mean, yes, but if you asked a random person to list classics, they probably wouldn't come up with that first, right? Like...
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's one of
those... Because she's contemporary, mm-hmm. but when in our book club, we always read, quote-unquote, a classic, and we picked The Haunting of Hill House for a classic one year, and also our Halloween book, because it is.
And, like, but that's the type of thing that, like, I want more of. Like, I want, you know, when you're talking about classics, I want people to bring up the horror novels, the sci-fi novels, the fantasies, the... Instead of just... the Austens and the Brontes and the Dickens. And, like, that's the thing. It's like
there's... genre is also classic.
Yes! And I feel like when people talk about the quote-unquote classics, it's always just the literary fiction.
And that's where the gatekeepers come in.
And that's what I think frustrates me the most, because The Lottery is amazing.
Yeah.
And very accessible, I think.
And this will be a whole thing, so I apologize. So the reason why I liked The Lottery so much is that I took a science fiction and horror course in like 7th or 8th grade, and one day we all walked into class and our English professor, Mr. Brandt, he was dressed very sullenly in this like kind of pilgrim's outfit, and he passed out pieces of paper folded up. And he said, whenever everybody is quiet and ready, please open your paper. Whoever has a dot on their paper, please stand up at the front. And then whoever had the dot of paper, it was not me, it was somebody else, stood up at the front. None of us in the class knew anything was to happen. And he started pouring up cups of water and handing it to the rest of us. And he comes up to us and says, okay, I want each one of you to go up and pour this cup of water on this person's head. And the person was starting to freak out, like, I don't want to do this. And he goes, well, you want an A in this class, don't you? And we were all sitting there like, what do we do? Like, should we start doing this? He said, if you guys don't pour water on this person's head, you will fail this class.
This is some serious
we didn't do it. Obviously, he stopped us before any of us would do it. But then we started reading The Lottery by Shirley Jackson. And it just, like, the pageantry of it was so profound. It was just great. So I'm going to get a lot of flack for this because I always tell people that you should read the book first before watching the movie. But the only way that I feel, for me as a reader, to find these books accessible, because it's very difficult to read. Like, the Bronte sisters are bananas, and, like, I don't know what goes on half the time. I've really tried reading Jane Eyre. A lot of people tell me that you should read this because she reminds me of you.
I can cut to the chase.
Right.
Reader, I married him.
Yeah. So, like, so for me, in order to really understand these books and these plays in Shakespeare, I watch the movie adaptations of them.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, like, Jane Austen. I am not a fan of Jane Austen. Emma has been adapted into, like, several movies, and they are all so ridiculously funny.
They're great.
My two favorite plays are, there was a play of Mice and Men that came out with James Franco.
Oh, yes!
Yes. And he, like, overshoots the entire, like, he overacts the entire time. But, man, I saw that live, and it was amazing. And the sets were great. Like, that's how... So, when I read Of Mice and Men back in high school, I really liked the part of guys like us were the loneliest guys in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because the relationship that they have, the two main characters have, reminds me of my brother and I.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, we're the loneliest guys in the world, but we have each other. And every time I read that book, I cry.
Oh,
I cry so hard.
Yeah. It is. It's a heartbreaker.
Tell me about the rabbits, George. Ugh. Is tattooed on my body next to my brother's, like, date of birth, because I just love my brother so much. I love that.
I do feel it's kind of like torture, though.
It is.
You're an angsty teenager, and you read that book. I remember I had to read that book in high school, and, like, I couldn't sleep after I read that book.
It's a rough book.
Very, very heartbreaking. Movie-wise, though, Scarlet Letter.
Yeah.
Do not ever watch that movie. No. They give it a freaking happy ending, which it does not have.
Easy A, though.
it's pretty great.
And so another,
that was Lindsay Lohan,
Emma Stone.
Yeah. Emma Stone,
love her.
The other play that I want to talk about is National Theatre Live. So Danny Boyle, who wrote Trainspotting and Slumdog Millionaire, he directed an adaptation of Frankenstein that my mom and I went to go see. And it's the characters, the actors are Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller, who is a wonderful actor who is in Trainspotting. He's just my favorite actor. And so every night, Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller would play Dr. Frankenstein and the monster. But every time they would play it, they would switch the characters.
Yeah,
so we saw this play twice. as Benedict Cumberbatch as the Doctor and the next night as the monster. Mm-hmm. And they do an amazing job. And I don't understand any of the dialogue because it is very, like, inaccessible to me because I don't understand any of the language. But when you see them act, it is just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I really like this, and I know that, you know, Michael is going to, like, flog me the next time he sees me. He's like, what are you doing? Don't make people watch the movies. If something is inaccessible, watch the movie and then try to go back and read the text. Mm-hmm. Or talk to somebody who has read the text and have a dialogue with them. That's how I've been working through, like, Wuthering Heights. Mm. I do want to talk about one adaptation that's coming out March 3rd. So there is this young adult, which I thought was funny, this young adult adaptation of Anna Karenina. It's called Anna Kay, and it is the story of Anna Karenina, but like 400 pages less, with less tragedy, but all of the scandal. So Annie Kay is the main character, and it's she's a Korean-American woman from a Greenwich Village affluence, so they're, you know, rich society member. She starts to fall in love with this playboy called Alexa, a.k.a. the Count. Mm-hmm. And he kind of, like, lives for his own pleasure. He's a playboy. He doesn't necessarily care. So they fall in love, and they have this kind of affair. And then something happens. As you know, if you guys know the story very well, something happens where her life starts to crumble, and it's like how she kind of like tries to figure out how far she is willing to go for this man that she loves. Mm-hmm. And then in between that, her brother Steven and her and his girlfriend Lolly are like in the middle of like a sexting scandal and things like that. So it is a YA book. It's going to be like this very melodramatic kind of YA book. That's how I go about reading the classics. And, like, again, I like more modern quote-unquote classics than I do the classics. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think read what you want to read.
Yeah.
And we won't gatekeep here. We'll help you find classics if you want to read classics, but we'll help you find contemporary stuff if you want to read that. And
but it doesn't hurt to give it a whirl. Mm-hmm.
Totally. I make a display every year, usually right sort of when summer reading is starting to happen in YA. That's just there's a reason these books are still in print. Mm-hmm. Give these classics a try. And I try to include things from various genres. And, you know, I try to pick some of the more traditional classics, but also some that are just books that have been in print for decades and decades and decades, because that doesn't happen a lot. Right. Books go out of print a lot. So, you know, so I try to, you know, throw those up there and be like, hey, listen, you know, maybe try it. There's a reason it's still being printed. But by the same token, like, I am the first person to be like, yeah, no, I don't. I do not gravitate towards classics at all. But if I read an adaptation and I love it, I might then go give the classic a try, give the original a try, and see what the fuss is about, so to speak. But I will never, ever shame anyone for being like, yeah, I don't like classics, or I don't understand the language, or I have trouble with them. You're not alone, my friend. You are not alone. It doesn't make you any less of a reader.
I'm going to throw out two last names, Thackeray and Trollope. If you want to try to read a classic that is just juicy and gossipy and like full of all kinds of, you know, tarts who are trying to make their way in the world, and Vanity Fair by Thackeray is a great book, which has also been made into lots of modern adaptations. And Anthony Trollope wrote, he was a postmaster, and he lived out in the countryside in 19th century England. And he writes these great books like the Barchester Chronicles that are like about
you know, people who are trying to make their way up and marry earls and countesses, mm-hmm. and and they're just a lot. Those are a lot of fun, and they're classics, but they just have like juicy, mm-hmm. gossipy stories.
Yeah.
So try those.
Awesome. All right, so let's start wrapping up here. We've got a bunch of events coming
so
up.
So many events.
So many good events. So it's a good year for events. Let's see. What do we have?
We have a book club coming up.
Yep. Oh, yeah. What are we reading for book club?
Semicolon. By, what's her name? Celia Watson, I believe.
Yes.
Which is about the history of the semicolon, which, believe it or not, is actually very interesting and political. And I personally believe there's a lot of sexism around the mm-hmm. use of the semicolon.
Hmm.
Male writers eschew it.
Hmm.
Female writers love it.
Interesting.
And so I think that might be one reason why. This is a book that I really wanted to read. And and it seems like the people who've begun reading it are actually enjoying it.
Yeah.
It's not
very
long.
It's a tiny book, maybe a little over 100 pages.
Awesome. Yeah, so that is Semicolon by Cecilia Watson, and that book club is Monday, March 2nd at 5:30 p.m. What are some of the other ones? Oh, the Open Discussion Project is coming back.
Yes, that was super popular.
Yes. So that, to remind our listeners, is a monthly discussion that is professionally moderated. The first one we're doing this year is Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell. That's Monday, March 9th at 5:30. Those were so popular last year, taking really kind of controversial topics and having a professionally moderated discussion.
And we encourage people from all parts of the political spectrum to come. It's about listening mm-hmm. to people whose point of view might be different from yours about something like the Second Amendment, for example.
Exactly. So very excited that that's coming back. March 15th at 2 p.m., Chris Bojalian's coming back to the store. Mm-hmm. We love Chris Bojalian. He's here for The Red Lotus, which is his new book, which actually comes out 2 days later.
Yep.
So if you come to our event, you get his book 2 days early. It's a Gibson's exclusive. That will be, so that's March 15th at 2. That's a Sunday.
And come early because he's popular.
He's so popular.
And I just finished Red Lotus because we have an arc of it.
Yeah.
And it's very, very juicy and very, very good. And you're going to love this book.
He's classic. Incredible. He wrote The Flight Attendant mm-hmm. and several others. He's a fantastic author. We love him. And then very exciting, tickets are on sale for Eric Larson the end of March, the 27th at 7 p.m. That's going to be at the Concord City Auditorium. And tickets are available through Eventbrite. There are links on our event page on our website and on our Facebook page and everywhere else as well. And you can you'll get you can either do one book with one ticket or two books with one ticket. For that, and if you can't make the event, you can still pre-order the book. It comes out the day this podcast comes out. It is out now, so you don't have to pre-order. Just come get it.
It's called The Splendid and the Vile, and it's about Winston Churchill and the bombing of London during World War II. And if you have not read Eric Larson, you must read Eric
mm-hmm.
Larson.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite of his is In the Garden of Beasts.
Oh, yep.
Which is also about World War II and the Nazis.
He is a fantastic history writer.
And he's a good speaker. You will really enjoy listening to him. He's excellent.
Yeah. So we have all those events and more. You can check our website, GibsonsBookstore.com. Check out our events calendar for all of that. Just as a reminder, our listeners can receive 3 digital audiobooks for the price of 1 through Libro FM. Go to libro.fm/Gibson's Bookstore, and at checkout, use the code LAYDOWN, LAYDOWN, to get that deal. They are so, so generous to be sponsoring us. We love them so much. So go sign up. Let's see. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website, once again, is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books we talked about today. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks.
Bye! Bye.